Hey Ben, how's things been going this week? How's
Oh, things have been going all right, Harrison. How about you?
it's been pretty bad. It's been pretty horrible.
Yeah?
I basically in the last week I found out that I have to get my wisdom teeth out.
Ew.
I didn't know, but apparently I'm only on my parents' healthcare system for the next 2.5 months because then it's my birthday.
Oh, yeah.
And I found that I'll, because I saw my, oh, sorry, I haven't saw, I'm seeing my immunologist soon, and it's probably not going to be good news for my eyes.
Are you only turning 21 this year?
No, 22, sorry, 22,
22.
22, when you turn 22, sorry,
Yeah.
I should clarify that. But yeah, they said when you turn 22, you get kicked off the healthcare fund. So,
Huh.
it's really worrying.
I got picked off when I was 21, and I just haven't been to a doctor since.
How's that working out for you?
Well, I'm not dead.
Oh well, that's good. That's very good. And you still smoke and stuff, so it's fine.
Oh yeah, in a couple of years I'm gonna have to, get back onto some sort of private health insurance or something like that.
Okay.
But right until now, I can abuse my body until the cows come home, and I can just sleep it off.
Yeah. I mean, I think I honestly think that there is a level of respect for people who, because I practically lived in a family of smokers. My grandfather smoked, my grandmother smoked, my dad smoked, my aunt and uncle smoked, and my other aunt and uncle smoked up until a couple of years ago. My dad just stopped, and my aunt stopped like a year or so ago, and my grandmother's dead. So it's kind of I don't know, I feel like I remember taking road trips with my dad, and he would just smoke all the time. And there is something like being an asthmatic, there is something amazing about that first light up. That I don't know what it is. Clearly, it's a chemical thing that I have
Oh, yeah.
nostalgia for. But it's a weird kind of sensation. And I feel like that's probably what smokers like more than anything, other than looking cool as fuck. Because
Oh, well, there's a whole bunch of different things that have to do with smoking, but like, I don't know, it's quite a worn topic, I'd say.
yeah,
That's only because I'm sick. Like, okay, the other week I heard there's a petition down here in Melbourne
yeah.
for a complete ban on like smoking in public areas, so that includes places like bus stops, tram stops, footpaths even. So like basically, like this petition's being signed to be put forward, so basically smokers can only smoke in their backyard or around their house.
Yeah. Well, see,
And I know, I think that's bullshit. Like, well, that's as a smoker, so that's with my clear bias being placed at the doorstep. I think that's bullshit because, yeah, people have a right to, their fresh air, but really, what are they? They're still breathing in car fumes. They're still breathing in like factory fumes that are still in the air. Like, it's not as if the air that would, like, when you live in a city or any kind of congregation of people, you're still not getting the fresh air. You're still kind of living in a whole bunch of shit. So it's just like, I don't know.
Yeah, I imagine like you don't see places like China or Shanghai or New Delhi like have those rules because they're covered in smog. I think that smog is I have an issue with smoking because I like my friends and I have friends who smoke and I don't want them to die before I do. But it's just
Well, that's selfish.
what. I'm sorry, I like hanging out with people. I'm sorry, it's a selfish situation. But the whole thing comes down to the fact that like, if people are gonna smoke, they're gonna smoke. It's like unless you have smoking police, which sounds fucking mental and awful in every single way. I just think that people should be allowed to smoke. I just like if people smoke, like there needs to be like I think they mentioned in the Harmontown podcast where it's just like decency. Like, hey, can you just not. Like smoke in my face, or just move away and just say,
Yeah.
yeah. Like
Well,
there's a
like
non-smoking way to
if
do
I
it.
ever see like people walking past on the street and stuff like that, I'll like direct my smoking so it's not trying so it blows over them or something like that. Or if I see like I will actually like, not smoke on my cigarette for a little while if I see a kid and stuff walking past. Like, I try to be as conscientious as I can with my smoking, and I always put my butt in the right place and stuff like that. Except for when I want to, do the real dramatic, like, butt on the ground, stamp that shit out, and walk back home.
Yeah.
You gotta always reserve those kind of moments for being able to litter. But at the same time, like, people can't complain about me just doing what I want to do when really, in the end, it's only really hurting myself. Like, it's a minor inconvenience to you for a little while because, oh, it's a little bit of a bad smell. But deal with it. Like, you know, we're becoming too soft. We're taking away all the little things that annoy us in life until all we live in these perfect little bubbles where we're so bored and mundane that we might as well start taking SOPA all day, every day.
Yeah, I mean,
Oh, not
it's.
SOPA, SOMA from Brave New World.
Oh, okay, all right. I was gonna say SOPA. I'm just like, well, what does internet censorship has to have to do with smokers?
I meant SOMA.
Yeah. Well, the thing is that like if we want to talk about sort of dystopias and stuff like that, and like how bad dystopians could get. I mean, like everybody kind of looks at, you know, A Brave New World and 1984. But do you know, this is a really bad segue, but do you know one of the worst dystopias I've ever seen, Ben?
What is one of the worst dystopias?
I think The Hunger Games has to be one of the worst dystopias fucking ever, because I mean the film. I mean, I have no qualms with the book, because I feel like I genuinely can't touch a book until I've read it, because there is more, that there's more influence and there's more, you know, recklessness when it comes to
I will
adaptation
say
of
the
film.
opposite to that only exists with Twilight, because I remember I used to argue against Twilight when it first came out, and I made like 5 points about the book, having never read it. And then to prove my point, I picked up my sister's copy and read just a page, and all five of those things I said were there.
Well, see, the
But
thing is,
yeah, continue with the Hunger Games.
no, well, I was gonna say, in regards to Twilight, like, I completely agree with you in terms of the fact that, like, I was dating a girl at the time it came out, and sometimes she would read passages of Twilight to me while I clearly wasn't listening. But the times that I did listen, it was fucking awful and just heart-churningly, you know, depressing and maudlin. No, because, like, you know, the text in itself is depressing more than, but just like the fact that someone, let alone somebody I, you know, had was attracted to, you know, was into that kind of thing. Because then I'm like thinking, obviously it differs. Like, I'm not gonna say that every person who reads or likes this is clearly a bad person and stuff like that. But I'm just saying that there are certain things and certain ideas in Twilight that if you're in a relationship and someone is reading Twilight, then you kind of question, you know, a few
The
things,
relationship
the
itself.
relationship itself, but like also the fact, like, you know, what does this person believe in regards to, you know, like female roles and, you know, what they expect of you and, you know, this, that, and the other, and it's just kind of like. It's just kind of depressing, like having to think about that constantly because of just a series of books. And just looking at it, like, just from, you know, a literary perspective, it's not like I've ever written a book, but I feel like Twilight doesn't need to exist in terms of, you know, in terms of literature. It just should, like, do you think the world is better without
The
it
amount of
or with it?
copies it sold, it obviously needs to exist because it fills some sort of hole for somebody. Like, you know, out there, it's hit a spot. It's just like it's disappointing that it wasn't done better. That's the thing about Twilight. Like, you know, it should exist by all means, but someone who actually has some skill in the area where it is, like in writing and storytelling and stuff like that. If someone had some skill in that area and still did the same thing, it still would have been popular.
Yeah, like that's the thing that I found with something like True Blood. While True Blood explores so many different things that are absolutely amazing in regards to, you know, racism and you know, like, sort of, you know, gender equality and, you know, gay and straight relations and stuff like that, and Republican, Democrat, etc. I feel like, you know, Twilight is so base level, so simple, and I feel like we're getting off topic here because I wanted to talk about The Hunger Games, but I feel like it's so just one-dimensional in every single aspect. Like,
Oh yeah.
there's nothing about, like, did they have Native Americans in it, and they have people who've, you know, traveled across the world. They never explore that. They're just place setters of, like, we're something exotic, we're something amazing.
Yeah.
Italy.
Oh yeah, they completely it's she's ha easily has never heard of Orientalism before.
Yeah, or colonialism for that matter. Like, there's like a, I'm pretty sure, and I wouldn't. I really don't want to look it up now because I'm talking to you and I'm trying not to be distracted. Except for when we have to, like, reference shit and I don't want to get it wrong. But the thing with that, like, I feel like there has to be a fangirl out there who is doing English lit or doing some kind of feminist studies or American history studies, and they've probably written a paper about like Native American and American relations in regards to Twilight. Because I feel like there's so much that should have been explored there. And so much about exploitation and about, you know, like the fact that Jacob is clearly part Indian, while Edward is, you know, very straight-laced, pale, white American trash. Well, not trash, but you know what I mean. Like he's the white man. That was Jamaican, not Native American. But there has to be something said about that that the book never explores, or that I don't think explores.
Well, it kind of deals with race in a really weird way by just kind of it ignores it completely to a degree, but it still treats it in quite an odd manner. Like, I don't know, it's not really you wouldn't call it racist or racially insensitive or
It's
anything,
just
would you?
I feel like Stephanie Meyer might just be just straight out ignorant to that
Oh,
kind
well,
of shit.
she's a white girl from Salt Lake City, isn't she?
I know that she's a Mormon, if that's what you're
Yeah,
trying to
she's well.
imply.
Then she from at some point in her life she's been spent some sort of time in Salt Lake City, and I don't know, like if you believe what Mormons believe, then you can easily like the logical step in writing Twilight is very apparent, I find.
Yeah,
Like, you know, it's like of course a Mormon wrote Twilight, but
well,
anyway,
she's
Hunger
yeah.
Games.
I mean,
What's your beef with Hunger Games?
the thing with my head, there's so many issues that I have with the Hunger Games film. I'm not going to start criticizing the book because I haven't read it. We've already been through that. But the film is so awful. I feel like, and I wrote a review for the Sticky Trigger, which is the site I write for, you know, ages ago about it. But I still can't get over it because of one, how much money it made. Like it made over $500 million. Like if it made like maybe 200 to 300 million, I kind of would have been okay with it. But the fact that it grossed over $500 million is just mental. Like it and like it's got such an amazing cast and such like an amazing director. Like I just wish it was better because the guy who directed Gary Ross previously had done some amazing films. Like he'd done Pleasantville and Big
Oh,
and.
did the guy who did Pleasantville direct it?
Yeah, and he wrote Big, and he also co-wrote this with the author Suzanne Collins and some guy named Billy Ray. Apparently, he wrote his first ever film was Color of Night, which is that awful, weird Bruce Willis psychology movie with Jane March, if anybody remembers that. He also wrote Flight Plan, which is one of the worst, like, weird. Sci-fi, I guess, movies like with Jodie Foster, and she goes on a plane, and then her child goes missing. But then everybody's like, "You don't have a child," and like things don't make sense. And anyway, the point is like it's the way that that film is shot, and also a few of the writing, like some of the places that the writing goes is really awful. Like there's so much in the directing with like how certain people do scenes, and also how it's shot. Like there's the first time. Like they're all together and the alarm goes off and stuff like that, and then they all get sent into the field. I thought that was an amazing sequence. And what it should have been is they should have just like had a close-up of Katniss's face and then just like completely zoom out to all of the guys like rising out of the things. I don't know, like the plateaus, the platforms, stuff like that. They come out of the platforms and then they just fucking go at it. And it should have just been a completely mute scene. And they should have just fucking just gone at each other and just fucking just ruined one another. And that would have been awesome. It just would have been a one long shot. They wouldn't have had to, you know, overemphasize the violence because it's a fucking PG-13 film, so they already got that covered. And they just fucking just go at each other and then they kill her, they kill, and then you do the close-ups when you need the close-ups. In fucking stead, they just have a series of shaky cam shots that fuck everybody in the audience over. Nobody, like, I understand, oh, it represents the chaos and it represents how awful, like, the situation that's happening. Like, I get that, that's fine, but you could have done it in a much better way. Like, I feel like there was so much creativity that could have gone into it, and I feel like all of that creativity was wasted on the battleground sequences when they had the people who are in, like, the upstairs area and watching the thing take place, and they change things and they throw beasts out there, and like they're and also the costumes, which hey, the costumes are fantastic. And Katie explained to me that all the costumes are basically a representation of like the 1% versus the 99%, because you've got all the districts and they're all poor as shit and stuff like that, while the 1% are all rich and like crazy and dress crazily, and it just makes them look unattractive, which I'm not sure if that's the point, because like Elizabeth Banks is in it and I fucking love Elizabeth Banks, and she's funny and she's adorable and she's sexy as fuck. And then, and The Hunger Games is probably the only film where I'm like, oh God, I've never been more unattracted to Elizabeth Banks in the world. Like, you know who Elizabeth Banks is, don't you?
Yeah.
Yeah, she's been
But
in.
With all this criticism, though, Harrison, I got to ask the question.
Yes.
You haven't read the books. So are you just going through what everyone else is going through when they watch the Harry Potter movies or watch any of the Lord of the Rings or the Hobbit or something like that?
Well, no,
like,
here's
the thing. I've talked to a lot of people who watch these films and they're just like, yeah, if you haven't read the book, it's pretty bullshit. And because I've read all these books, then it's like, you know, it makes sense.
But, yeah, like Katie told me about, like, there is, and I had this discussion with people, other people who had read the book who were very defensive of the film. And when they explained the stuff to me that wasn't in... that was in the book but was not in the film, I was like, no, that's understandable, but there are ways that they could have explained that. For example, like, there's dogs at the end that try and attack them and do all this crazy shit and stuff like that, and I just thought it was like a Deus Ex Machina thing to try and hurry up the killing or to create suspense. And what I found out is those dogs are, one, they're genetically modified dogs and that exist in the world, and I'm like, okay, that would have been nice if they explained that. Like the birds and the stuff, the creatures that are in the Hunger Games world don't exist, and they like, I'm not a botanist, I'm not a person who covers zoology or cryptozoology, but it would have been nice if that was like, I thought a mockingjay was a real thing up until like I watched that film and I'm like, okay, no, I'm a fucking idiot, because it's a mix of a mockingbird and a blue jay, which is explains why the mockingjay is able to imitate sounds and stuff like that, which is great. I think that's really creative and that's awesome. But the dog thing at the end is like, okay, so the dogs and shit like that, but they look weird. And then Katie explained to me, like, I could have been wrong about explaining this. Like, this is me hearsay from, God, when did the Hunger Games come out? Like
a while ago.
Yeah, like,
pretty, like slow.
8 months or so ago. Was it March? It was almost a year ago. Jesus Christ. Okay, so it's 11 months ago. And basically saying that the dogs are actually reformed versions of the kids that had already died. And I'm like, that's an incredibly cool concept, because it kind of has this idea of reincarnation, which the Hunger Games kind of, you know, has like this very sort of spiritual undertones that I can kind of understand. But overall, just kind of ridiculous, just kind of stupid. These dogs coming out of nowhere just really, really doesn't make any sense. And it,
well,
yeah,
I don't know. I haven't seen it at all. The thing I want to know, Harrison, is why do you have such a stick in your craw about the Hunger Games?
I think it's just because I have friends who really, really like it.
And they're still talking about it?
Not that they're still talking about it. It's just like, because, like, you know, they're ramping up for the new one. The new one comes out in November this year. And they're sort of starting to slowly release the promotional pictures. So I see it come up in my Facebook feed or on Twitter every now and again. And I just kind of, I don't know, it just kind of shakes me up. Initially, it was the fact that, like, Katie was watching the film again, like, she was just watching, like, we hide out the DVD, because some people still do that, we hide out the DVD, and because we were bored, and we just like, what do we want to watch, I don't know, so we were watching it, and I was trying to write up a review or something like that, and I just kept peering over, and I just kept shaking my head every now and then, like, I would just look up, and it's just like, that's fucking stupid, that's, so, like, why the fuck do they, like, okay, this is more of an issue with the book more than anything else. You have a mining village that can't really afford food, like, the whole thing of the Hunger Games is the fact that there's only so much food that can go around from the 1% to the 99%. So it, how do they have a fucking bakery? There's like a kid there who like makes, he decorates cakes. Like, are they mud cakes? I don't get it.
I know, it's just, it sounds like teen fiction to me, which is what I think it is.
I think the film is very much teen fiction, but I think the books, I started reading the first book, and the only issue I had is there is literally a fucking page worth that describes Katniss's outfit. And I'm like, I just want to skip this kind of bullshit. Like, it doesn't, like, there is no, like, very rarely has ever somebody's outfit, you know, been turned into, you know, points of discussion when it comes to literature. Other than, like, maybe The Great Gatsby and the use of gold and the use of green in that novel. Like,
there's a lot of examples where the characters wear in the book themselves is important.
Yeah.
But it's just like, I don't know, it's the Hunger Games. Like, I think you might be taking it a little bit too seriously, or, like, building up, like, because it was always meant to be, you know, like, a good film, but, it got mad rep for being a pretty good film.
It's an
okay, but at the same point, it was still being, like, it's still marketed to people younger than us. It was marketed to families. It's marketed
to families, yeah.
Yeah, not our kind of demographic. We weren't the intended audience for The Hunger Games.
But that's...
But you say that it's a bad film. Do you know what a better film is?
Okay, yes. Do tell what a better film
is. The Master.
Oh, okay. I have not seen that, but do go on.
Well, I watched it last night. It's the newest P.T. Anderson film.
Yes.
He did, Boogie Nights, There Will Be Blood,
Yeah.
that kind of stuff. And I'm not sure. I'm pretty sure Johnny Greenwood from Radiohead does the soundtrack again
Yeah.
for the Master. And it is just like the whole thing. It's like you're just watching a tapestry that has just been woven together to like play this beautiful orchestra kind of thing.
Yeah,
Like,
yeah.
mixing metaphors there, but it's still like it's still really, really good movie. Like, the acting is incredible. The directing is just as good. Like with P.T. Anderson, I hope that we don't have any of those fucking elitist film people listening to our thing who are just like, oh no, Kubrick's king. No one's gonna be better than Kubrick ever.
We
I don't know why they
have
put
to
that
have
in there.
fans first for them to
Oh
say anything
yes, exactly.
to.
You need to actually have people listen to it. But
Tell your friends.
yeah, no, with P.T. Anderson, I think he's probably, in my opinion at least, the only director who's come close to having like as good a visual style as Kubrick,
Yeah.
to a degree. Like, because he does those really long, drawn out shots as well.
Yeah, and
Like,
they're
it's and
masterfully done.
oh, it's incredible. Like, he's the master of those. Like,
Oh.
anyway, yeah, no, it's just like it's done so well throughout this entire film. Like, I remember there was an old quote. I can't remember who said it. I think it might be Kubrick, but it's just like, short shots mean that you don't have much to see,
Yes,
and stuff like that. Or yeah, I was paraphrasing then, but it's just like these long shots. Like, there's so much focus put into the characters, and like, it's Philip Seymour Hoffman and Joaquin Phoenix. They are both two incredible actors. Like the chemistry they have on screen, and the like, you forget that you're watching actors when you're watching this. They actually become they embody these people that they're playing, and they just it's a truly masterfully done film. Like, to stop using that word, ironically.
That's but here's the thing is like I found out that according to The Guardian in 2012 he was ranked among the 23 best film directors in the world, but he was number one, which is absolutely incredible. And I didn't know
Yeah.
he was married to Maya Rudolph from Bridesmaids and
Oh, wow.
that show Up All Night, which I kind of like, but I've sadly stopped watching recently. But there's and Friends with Kids, which is another film I think people should watch. But the thing is that when it comes to Paul Thomas Anderson with the long shots and stuff like that, I respect people who do that because I feel partially that's what cinema is about. Because if you want
Yeah.
shortcuts, you've got television. If you want shortcuts, read a series of vignettes or plays and stuff like that. But when it comes to like film, the amount of dedication and the amount of people and the amount of insight that goes into a single take, like that's for one of the reasons that's why Children of Men is one of my favorite films. There is like three or four amazing single take shots in that film, and every single one of them, it's not like boring, like it's just people talking and they're coming across, or it's the walk and talk, which was kind of popularized by The West Wing. It's these fucking stunning action sequence where shit is blowing up, people are fucking dying, and like there's blood on the camera, and these people are falling down, and they have to react to everything that's around them that's real, and the camera just keeps rolling and keeps shooting like it's classic war photography, like it's
Well, it also
so
really it plays onto that, like, I know it makes it a lot more immersive and
yeah.
experience. It makes it a lot more real to a degree, because with the acting, the actors can actually play the characters. It's a much more like a stage play, like where you go to watch, something in the theater, and it's just part of the impressive nature of that art form is the fact that these actors go up on stage and they hold these characters. They are these people for solid 2-3 hour blocks.
Yeah.
And when you watch it done in film, which is really achieved through these really long shots, like there's there's this one shot in the film where Philip Seymour Hoffman is do you know the kind of the plot of the film at all?
Yeah, I understand that it is partially based on the recorded history of how Scientology was formed, and basically the emotional and the sorry, the relationships and the emotional sort of deconstruction of like how those people actually lived under the cultish kind of rule. Please don't sue us or follow us around in
Yeah,
vans.
exactly. Yeah. Very well, you basically got it on the head for someone who hasn't watched the film.
I've just seen so much promotional stuff, and
yeah, well,
it's,
oh, dude,
yeah.
You need to actually watch
it. I know,
because
yeah,
there's,
yeah.
Like, yeah, there's this one scene between Philip Seymour Hoffman, who's playing the
L. Ron
detached
Hubbard.
L. Ron Hubbard.
Yeah.
And then there's Joaquin Phoenix, who's the main character, and his name's Frankie in the film, and he's kind of just a character. Side character in the Elrond mythology. I don't know where he really fits in at all.
Yeah.
But yeah, and he's just like he's getting what they call in the film processed, and that's like, you know, the e-meter questionnaires that they do now, like, you know, based on the same kind of thing. Just like they ask you the same question again and again. Like there's this one where you're not allowed to blink, and if you have to answer all these questions starting from what's your name to, like, you know, what pain do you have, like, you know, getting like, and they'll ask you again and again, like in repetition, to try to like break an answer out of you. And there's this one single long shot where it's a good 5 minutes of Joaquin just not blinking and answering these questions, and
Jesus.
His whole, like, this, and this, he's got this character so, like, his body language changes completely. Like, if you went and watched Walk the Line, and
oh,
then
yeah,
went and
yeah,
watched
yeah.
this, like, his entire body changes. Like, he looks like an entirely different person just by the way he's holding his face and things like that. And, like, in this one scene, you know, his eyes begin to water, they're, like, you know, they're getting redder, he's getting more emotional, and it's just this real, like, it's just this close-up of his face. So it's
Jesus.
Really, like, the acting for it has to be intense, and he hits it completely on the head. It is so powerful.
Did you happen to see the sort of the in between film that he did with Casey Affleck called God, what was it called? I'm Still Here.
No, I never did get to see that.
It's an incredible, like, in terms of like Joaquin's acting, I feel like I'm Still Here is you know, almost on the level of you know, Exit Through the Gift Shop in terms of, like, is this a documentary, even though it clearly isn't. But, like, I remember seeing Walk the Line when that came out in 2005, and it was kind of like, I mean, after, like, literally a year after Ray, I was kind of like, oh, this is, like, one of those fucking, like, definite Oscar films where it's just like, no, clearly you're going for a biopic of an emotional story, like, it's going to happen, blah, blah, blah. And then
yeah.
I saw it, and I was like, no, he fucking deserves it. Like, of all the people, like, and then he didn't even, I don't think he even got fucking, like, no, he did get nominated for an Academy Award for Best Actor, but he didn't win. I think that was the year of Brokeback Mountain, so things were kind of, like, shaky in terms of, like, because it was Crash and Brokeback Mountain, and I honestly don't think Crash should have won that much. But yeah, and that's my
yeah no.
Walk the Line is
a
great film.
I wasn't as thrilled by Crash as everyone else seemed to be, but
I think that, like,
the thing with Joaquin, however you say his name,
it's Joaquin.
I was talking to someone the other day. And they said, I don't like him at all. He's basically just written his entire career is based on the fact that he's River's brother.
Yes.
Like, if River never died outside the Viper Room, was it?
Yeah, it was. Then, yeah.
Then his career never would have picked up at all. And I completely disagree, because I think that Joaquin himself has been living under that fact and being like, okay, I actually need to be better than my brother having just died. Like,
yeah,
I actually need to work at this acting thing. I need to be good. I need to have, like, the abilities to back up what I like my position, because I can't just be that guy who's his brother. Like, if I'm actually going to do this, I need to do it properly. And I felt like he's completely done that. He's actually really excelled in that area.
And I know, in a really horrible, awful, I don't understand acting kind of way, I feel like the fact that his brother passed away, which sadly, River Phoenix, who was an amazing actor.
I only really have seen him in Stand By Me, but I enjoy the shit out of that
movie. I think he's also in a film called Apt Pupil, which I remember seeing, like, in my teens and being like, oh, I understand this is me, but then it's like, you know, growing up and being like, oh, this was based on a Stephen King novel, and it was many, it, this is very dark, this is really,
that's
really
what I love about Stand By Me.
Yeah. You know, yeah, I mean, in terms
I
don't
know,
like,
it's the perfect, well, it's one of the perfect Stephen King adaptations.
I was being slightly ironic because compared to Stand By Me. Stand By Me is, you know, a nice reflection of innocence and childhood, but Apt Pupil is about Nazis. Sorry, that was, and it's amazing, and it's got it's a great film. Am I thinking of River Phoenix, or am I thinking of somebody else? Okay, I could have this really, really wrong. All right,
yeah,
I gotta look this up.
Sure.
Okay, never mind. Anyway, the point is, I've heard Apt Pupil is really good. I'm gonna have to look up River Phoenix now. But yeah, again, in a way, like, the fact that River Phoenix died is kind of, this sounds awful, but like That's like the place where Joaquin goes to be an actor. Like the fact that he, you know, his brother died at 23, and you know he's like has to, you know, if he needs to be emotional, like he's thinking about this, you know, constantly. I mean, even though it's been 20 years since he's dead,
Definitely, and he's probably had like other pain in his life.
Oh God, yeah.
Aside from that as well. I don't know, but that was the thing. Like, you know, when I was because I dabbled in acting when I was a teenager and stuff like that, and I could never really do serious things.
You're in a film, aren't you?
Oh yeah, but that's more of a cameo.
Oh, what do you mean a cameo? You're in it.
Yeah, but it's just it's a small part. Like I'm in it for like I'd say less than 30 seconds.
I'm just saying like you're actually in it. You're actually able to help Michael.
I would love to help a heap more, but
I was unfortunately very absent during that. I'm actually looking up the IMDb page to see if you're listed, which you're not. Never mind.
Is the page actually up?
Oh, dude, the page has been up for like over a year. Like, unfortunately, there hasn't been a change from 2012 to 2013 because I'm.
Oh yeah, well that's because he's actually got to finish the film.
Yeah, I know. I'm just waiting for it to come out because I think it'll be amazing when it comes out. Like I think I told Michael at some point because I do social media for certain sites and stuff like that. But I promised him, like, dude, if you like want me to run the Twitter page or the Facebook page to try and get people to like it and to watch it and stuff like that, like I feel like honestly, like Michael will do fine by himself just for his animations because did you see his latest one?
Oh yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah, let's plug the shit out of this.
Okay, first of all, go to, if you're listening to this now, pause this podcast. We're going to give you like 10 seconds to pause the podcast and look up youtube.com/AEKIME. That's Michael Cusack's YouTube page where he's got some animations on there and stuff like that. Well, his most famous one, YOLO, which you should be very proud of because if you look up YOLO, it's the second highest one underneath a fucking Lonely Island video, which they just released.
But the thing that annoys me is that before that video was released, he was the top hit.
Really?
For YOLO. Yeah, he was the top hit on YouTube for YOLO for a long time until that song was released.
That is very true. I'm just looking up now in terms of upload date. You're right. You're very right. And I honestly think I thought the YOLO music video by The Lonely Island was very good because I like Kendrick Lamar and I think he's going to be a fucking amazing, talented rapper for the next year or two. But yeah,
not really a fan of Andy Samberg for me though.
Really, you're not a fan of Andy Samberg?
Well, his face annoys me. Everyone else is like, oh, it's so hilarious. But that jizz in my pants. Like, you know, whenever I watch the film clip, I'm just like, okay, so you're just making dumb faces for 3 minutes. There's a That's a great joke there. Great joke.
Yeah.
Real.
But I think to some degree that he's self-aware of making those stupid faces, because I think that that was their shtick early on. Like, if you watch the episodes of The Boo and some of their early music videos and stuff like that, I think they pulled those faces kind of way too much, and then they kind of evolved out of that, and now they're kind of
doing
it.
Exactly. They've become parodies on themselves.
Yeah. Like,
they did those faces a couple of times. Yeah, it'd be kind of funny, but they do it so often and so consistently that it's just become, like, it's gone to the point where, you know, that is what they do. That is, they can't say they're doing it ironically anymore. They are doing it.
Yeah, I mean, like, compared to their work, which is, you know, they started doing videos. God, when were we in high school? Shit.
4 years ago?
It was longer than 4 years ago. I've been at uni for 5 years.
No, wait. Yeah, 5 years. Shit.
Yeah, it was way, okay, well, the first episode, did you ever watch The Boo? The parody that they did of The O.C.?
No, I didn't.
Okay, well, that was how I first heard about them. And that was back in 2003 was their first episode of The Boo. That was a show with Sarah Chalk from Scrubs, and it was the guys from The Lonely Island and stuff. But, yeah, like, they did that back in 2003, and it's literally 10 years later. And you know, now they're on SNL. Although, apparently, all of them are leaving SNL.
Boo-hoo?
Wait, I don't know if we've discussed this before about how you feel about Saturday Night Live.
Oh, well, it's just, basically, look at how many fucking writers are on that show. Like,
yes,
at the
it's
end,
a very long
credits,
ride.
How many
yeah.
fucking writers are on that show? And you're telling me you can't get a good fucking sketch like, you know, consistently. Like, you know, for a show that goes for an hour, or, well,
yeah,
around
it's about an
a
hour.
week,
Yeah.
you know, they have like, I don't know, there's just something about SNL, like, unless the host themselves, like, you know, okay, the episode where Louis C.K. was on there was actually pretty good.
Yeah,
I actually really enjoyed that. That's because Louis C.K. is one of those guys who's just, like, he's just funny. Like, you know, he just, like, whatever he is around or touches or puts his input into becomes funnier.
Yeah.
He's just one of those guys. And for the opening monologue, he didn't do a fucking monologue. He did his act.
Yeah.
And that's exactly what you need to do if you're Louis C.K. hosting SNL. And fun, yeah, they were all right on there, but it's just like, you know, the bands never really, like, even if I enjoy the band, I never really enjoy watching them on SNL for some reason.
Yeah,
it's never really that great. And, but it's just like, okay, yeah, with the whole writing situation, there are so many writers on there. There are so many people working on SNL. And a lot of the time, like, you know, at least 3/4 of the show just isn't funny. You know, they're trying to, like, and the sketches, they always go fucking way too long. Like, you know, they'll have, like, an opening, they'll have a joke for when, you know, the camera first turns onto that set. And, like, when the characters first appear. And, like, you know, this is lately. You know, very much lately. And it used to be the older stuff as well. But it's just, like, they'll just carry on jokes, just carry on, carry on. And if the audience wasn't laughing, I wouldn't have even thought the show was a comedy.
Yeah, like, the thing with that is that, and it's something that I really noticed, definitely kind of during the Bush era, they kind of got rid of their sort of funnier gags, like, funnier, crazier gags that they would start off each episode, and then they do a political gag. And the political gags kind of have been running. Like, if it's a political year, they will fucking run that shit into the ground. And I understand there's wacky shit that happens in politics literally every day. Like, that's why we have The Daily Show. But then they forget that's why we have The Daily Show. Like, we don't expect, like, serious political satire. Not serious political. Well, yeah, serious political satire from SNL.
When I think about SNL, I think of dumb, silly gags.
Yeah.
Like, that's where Wayneworld came from. That's where Will Ferrell started.
Yeah.
Like, you know, and all of his characters. Like,
yeah, and the kind
you
of...
know, it's never really been it's never really been highbrow comedy at any point. Even when Bill Murray was on, when Chevy was on.
Yeah.
Like, you know, it was when Adam Sandler was on. Like, I'm not naming any names right now that are their highbrow comedic value.
It's well, see, the thing is, like, yeah, we when you mentioned Wayne's World and the work of Will Ferrell and stuff like that, it went from wacky skits or wacky character actors into acting. And with The Lonely Island, it kind of went in reverse for that, where you had these crazy, you know, internet guys, and now they're on the show. And the same thing with College Humor, because those guys are New York based and they've been working on that website for, you know, at least 6 or 7 years now. Now they're hiring up those writers and they're doing their online content, which is above average, which. I wrote a blog post of it, like, several months ago saying, like, unless they really step up their game, like, this isn't really going to work. And then eventually they started actually releasing some really great original content, like Waco County and I think it's called The Bellhop or something like that. It's got Fred Armisen in it, who I adore. And I just thought, like, they're going in the reverse order. They're not creating any new, you know, they don't have any crazy new character actors that are going to be incredible now. Now they're looking online to find people. Like, that's where Jay Farrow came from. Jay Farrow was doing, you know, Obama impressions and Eddie Murphy impressions. And now they don't need to have Eddie Murphy pretty much ever again until he makes another really bad film on SNL as a guest host. So
yeah.
I feel like, yeah,
well,
like, SNL isn't going to produce anybody
like,
new.
It has been and it always will be, I reckon. Well, will for a while at least. Be as long as TV is around until it dies, which it inevitably will.
Yeah.
It always has been, you know, the source of, you know, new comedy writers for the New York and LA scene. Like, you know, it's the talent pool in which most stations go searching for their new showrunners and things like that for comedy shows, and like especially NBC. Like, NBC's been poaching that pool for a long time.
Yeah, exactly.
And it's like, you know, it's good. Like, you know, at the moment you've got people like Jason Sudeikis and stuff like that in there, and he's always a lot of fun. But it's but still SNL. Like, you know, his work is best in like Horrible Bosses and
yeah, exactly.
And his guest appearance in It's Always Sunny.
Yes.
Not in SNL.
No.
Like, I've never seen him in SNL, and I thought, oh yes, that's some good Jason Sudeikis. But I see him in these other things, and I'm just like, yeah, good stuff, bro, good stuff. Like, you know.
Mm.
But I don't know. Well. What do you think it's do you think it's time?
There was one or two other things that we wanted to talk
Oh
about.
yeah,
Like,
well let's
well,
cat those.
the two things. I recently played Ni No Kuni, which is the game that is exclusive to the PS3 and has been made with the help of Studio Ghibli. Now, Studio Ghibli, if you don't know, is one of the most amazing anime studios in the world, and I, as a teenager, I absolutely loved their work, and Oscar-winning shit for Spirited Away and stuff.
Okay, yeah, so it's Miyazaki.
It's Miyazaki. I should have just said Miyazaki. I always just say Studio Ghibli, but it's essentially just Miyazaki and a great, amazing amount of talented animators. Just try that whole sentence without using the word Asian. So there's. They are Asian, like it's not.
Well, you shot yourself in the foot when you pointed that out at the end.
Yeah, yeah. You can hear me struggling constantly. That's my whole life. The sort of the idea of it is basically the typical kind of Miyazaki formula where it's like, oh, it's a young person and something awful happens to them and they get transcended to another world. But usually when that's in Miyazaki films, it's a little bit more subtle. While the game is not so subtle, your mother dies from a heart attack. And then you cry on this little creature thing who comes to life, and then he takes you to this other world. And I found out Ni No Kuni actually just translates to another world. So that kind of helps. But yeah, the game was really interesting. I usually don't like JRPGs, like, at all. Like, I think the last one that I played was The World Ends With You, and I was in a bad spot when I played that, so it was just like, oh, I'm depressed. Oh, this game makes me depressed. Maybe I should feel happier about myself. No, I guess not. But, Yeah, and also I've been playing, the game Garry's Mod.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah, Garry's Mod, for people who don't know, is
if
this...
If you don't know Garry's Mod, then you've done something wrong with your life so far.
Yeah, it's this amazing sandbox creator based around... Not necessarily just based around the work of Valve, who makes Half-Life 2 and stuff like that, but you can actually put whatever you want into that game, essentially, as long as you have the files for it. Yeah. But I've been playing it recently because I like Trouble in Terrorist Town, but I recently found... dark roleplay servers, and I heard that, and I read this amazing story on Reddit about a guy who went into one of those servers, and it was essentially occupied Germany, for and people were pretending to be Hitler, and people were pretending to be Jews, and there were camps and stuff like that, and it was fucking mental. And so I thought, okay, well, this is pretty hardcore. Like, I should prepare for myself for this. And so, I just thought, like, okay, it's gonna be role playing. If I don't like it, like, after, like, a couple minutes, I can just bump out, just play Terrorist Town. And so I get into it, and it's like this, kind of, interesting world where you've got cops and you've got gangsters, and it's not the Third Reich, but it's kind of interesting. And basically, I thought, well, you can kind of create whatever job you want. You can pretend to be somebody in there. And I was like, well, what do I want to do? And so I pretended to be a psychologist for 2 hours while people came to me with their problems. And it was the most craziest amount of fun that I ever had. The weird thing is that there was a guy who came to me initially who was one of the cops, one of the civil protection people. And the guy was like, oh, I really need help. And I'm like, well, what's wrong? It's like, I lost my turtle. And I'm like, oh, that's so sad. Like, do you think there's a reflection of, like, do you have abandonment issues? Like, how do you sort of feel about that situation? And, he was like, I'm just so sad. And all the time, just like, well, maybe you should call your mother. Maybe you should, work things out with her and just see how things go and stuff like that. And he's like, okay, all right. And then, a few people came and went and stuff like that. And then she came back a few days later and he actually had a turtle, like, with him. And I was like, where did you find it? And he kind of like looked over, somewhere, and he was just like, I was over there. I'm like, this is amazing. And he was really, really happy. And he was just, just joyous. Like, I thought, like, I was just fucking around because, like, nobody's taking this seriously and stuff like that. And then he came back a few days later and he just threw.
Can I just ask, how can you tell he was joyous through a video game? Okay. Did you hear his voice?
No, no, no.
Could you see his face?
He kept jumping around, and he didn't have voice chat. Like, I have voice chat. I was talking to him back.
So he had a very excitable thumb then.
Yeah, he was. Yeah, he was kind of like, just like jumping around and being very, very happy and stuff like that. And so then he came back a couple of days later and just like, well, what's wrong? I thought, some of your problems were solved. You have your title back. And he was like, we've been fighting, Frank and I've been fighting. And then we just had this whole role play back and forth about, his title being rude. It was very interesting. And I wish I had recorded some of it because it was probably some of the most fun I've had in a game in quite a while. So glad I did that so quickly, because I think it's now time. Unless there's gaming stuff you want to talk about.
No, I just need to pee first.
Okay. All right. Well, I will. I'm gonna pause it, and we'll just edit that out.
Okay, well, you don't have to.
Okay. Okay. So I think it's about that time then. I think it's time.
Is it that
I
time?
wish we had like some kind of music to go in here, like just a fanfare or something.
Well, I don't know. We can find some music maybe. We
Okay.
can.
Oh, I just don't want to get like some of that royalty-free music because sometimes it's not the best.
Oh, no, we can look around. We
Okay.
can find something else. Well, even if it, like, I don't know, our audio quality isn't even that good, so even if it's a shitty sounding song, it doesn't really matter.
That's true. I just don't want to use anything copyright. Anyway, okay, so for those of you who have listened to our last three episodes, this is the gist. I'm going to give Ben three film titles, and we're going to make up a film in less than an hour. And I think that's what we're going to do, Ben. Is that what we're...
Yeah, that's sounds like it.
Yeah. All right.
Okay, so what are the three titles this week?
Okay, so I kind of wanted to get away from the exploitation thing, but I've been thinking about this these titles recently, and I thought they kind of sound exploitation-y, but we don't want to go in that direction.
Okay, we won't, no exploitation.
Okay, so we have Vanity Bond,
Vanity Bond?
The Dripping,
The Dripping.
and Flicks Last Weekend.
Okay. Okay, this week.
Okay.
See, there's a lot of things going on here.
Yeah. It's
I don't know, Vanity Bond is like, it's like a serious drama, like about high life in New York, but The Dripping sounds like a porno. And Flicks Last Weekend is, a sequel to The Bug's Life, so
Yeah. Could you just
I don't know.
one? So what are you gonna go with, Ben? What are you gonna go with?
I think I'm gonna go with The Dripping this week.
Really? Because that sounds exploitation-y.
It does sound exploitation-y, but will it be exploitation?
Okay, well then you can't do a porn film, you know that, right?
Okay, no porn film.
Right.
Just had to re-gear my brain there for a second.
Okay, all right. Well then, I mean, The Dripping as a porn film sounds like worse or awful and yeah.
Really?
What sounds like as a porn film? I don't know if I'd want to see it.
Well, I don't know. It's just like, do you have a thing for squirters?
I'm not gonna answer that.
Well, then The Dripping probably won't be a good film then.
But that's less dripping and more a different verb for it.
No, it's a, I think that fits. Anyway, The
Okay,
Dripping.
The Dripping.
Okay, is Bill there?
I might be here. I don't know. I've been taking existential classes. It's been a weird week for me. I may have called my mom and cried. I don't know.
Okay, it sounds a little odd. And personally, Phil, that's not what we're paying you for, even though we don't pay you.
No, I pay you. That's kind of how things work.
Exactly. So, get your shit together and leave that emotional bullshit at the door, thank you. So we're here to pitch films.
Okay. All right. Well, what films have you got this week? I
Okay,
can see
so
Harrison being quiet in the corner again. Hey, guys.
this week is The Dripping.
You guys know we don't make porns here, right?
It's not a porno, don't worry. It's not a porno. It's not a horror, it's not an exploitation. It's a hard-hitting character investigation.
Okay. So hard. Again, we don't do porns here.
It's not that. It's about a Turkish immigrant,
Okay, all right, Turkish immigrant.
and he comes to Australia. So we're going to be setting this down under. It's going to be
Okay, well,
Australian.
there'll be a tax write-off. That's good from the beginning.
Yep, exactly. The producer offset, so you should be happy. And it's set in, the suburbs of Sydney, Parramatta,
Okay.
and a Turkish man, he moves there before his family can move there, because they're destroyed by war over there. If you didn't know
Yeah,
that, it's
that's
a really hard time. So he gets off the boats. He's old. He's scruffy. He's played by, don't know any Turkish actors.
Well, not necessarily have to be Turkish actors. They can be anything you want them to be, but we'll
Well,
dress them up as Turkish.
okay. You know the guy who plays Leon in Leon the Professional?
Oh, you mean Jean Reno?
Yeah, that guy.
Jean Reno. Jean Reno is a Turk.
Is he?
No, as a Turk, not is a Turk.
Oh, yeah, that's him. He's the main character. So So he gets off, it's said in one day, and he gets off the plane, and he's walking dreary-eyed through Sydney Airport, and, he's sitting
I thought it was
silently
after
in
the
the
boats.
taxi.
I
Huh?
thought it was after the boat.
Well, that wouldn't make sense, because no one really takes boats around anymore.
Okay, all right. I just thought we were talking to him,
So
so
yeah,
I
he
guess.
gets off the airplane, he's walking slowly through the airport, there's some sad music playing, it's raining in Sydney, there's rain coming down, and, he's in a taxi, and he finally shows up at his sister's house,
Okay.
because his sister has lived here for a while, and she's all very she's lost all her culture. She's very white-sided.
What, and who is it's his daughter?
No, his
His
sister.
sister, sorry. And what's
What's the main guy's name again?
we haven't given him a name yet.
No. Well, the actor's.
It's Jean Reno.
Jean
Jean
Reno.
Reno. Don't worry, I'm taking notes. That's well, my assistant's taking
Well,
notes.
I need to be able to talk about him, so.
Okay.
Yeah,
That's my
and
assistant.
well, his sister is going to be played by. Need some help here.
Oh, okay. Who's a good actress right now? But there's plenty of good actresses, but who's a really good one? I'm just gonna look at my phone. I'm gonna type in good actress, and I'm gonna see what comes up. So we do we want an Australian actress? Do we want what do we want here? What if we had who's the girl from the OC? That's
Mishibata.
Oh God, no. God, that's awful. The other one, the one who did things.
Did things.
Rachel Bilson.
Oh, yeah. Rachel Bilson, yeah.
Yeah. Well,
Okay, let's go with her.
okay. I'm actually looking at what
Okay,
Mishibata is
so
doing right now.
he turns up at Rachel Bilson's door,
Okay.
and she's all like, "Oh, hi, brother, how are you going?" And they have their moment where they reconcile with each other, and they all that kind of stuff. And so she's showing him around the city, and he's all like, "Oh, this is so foreign to me. I'm such a fish out of water right now. I'm so new to all these experiences." And like, he sees women walk past, and just bikinis, and he's shocked by it. He's just like,
Oh my
"Oh,
God.
it's a travesty," and like, things like that. And she's like, "No, things are different here. You've got to get used to them now, And like, it's like he's just having all these moral problems with all these different levels of morality that surround him and things like that, because he's such a fish out of water. He's drowning in the air. And but eventually, they're sitting down at a coffee shop, and Rachel Bilson and Jean, they're talking to each other, and she's like, "So what are you going to be doing here?" He says, "Oh, I've got big plans for my time in this country." And
Yes.
she's like, big plans? What are you planning?" He's like, don't you worry, it'll be very, very big. Everyone will hear about it. my
Oh
uh
my
my
God.
impact shall resound throughout the newspapers and the internet servers and all media outlets known to
He's being
man."
very, very specific.
He's being very foreboding, some might say,
Okay.
because we don't know what his plans are, but he's a man of Middle Eastern descent, and we've been taught by Fox News to fear people. They have big plans, so we feel like he might be, he might be doing something bad. Then comes, a whole bunch of intensive. It's a musical montage. It's a got almost like the music almost sounds like rain pouring on the window pane as time passes, and it shows him in a workshop working away. He's sweating. He's beating metal. He's welding shit. He's doing all this kind of stuff. And then after a period of time, he steps back, and he's like, "Ah, it's ready."
He's
And then
ready.
he turns around, and it is a custom rotisserie kebab maker.
Oh, wow.
Yeah. And so you find out that his big plans was to open the best kebab shop all of Parramatta.
Oh my God. Okay, I'm loving this film already. Okay.
So he gets some land, he opens up the store, he makes the sign, it's all set up, he's all ready, and he's just like, "Yes, I'm going to make my life now. This is the first act turning point, and I'm ready to catapult myself into the second act." So he's standing around, and he's waiting for his very first customer, and that's when who walks in
Oh no, who is
but
it? Wait, what kind of guy?
an Indian guy,
Oh, okay.
because he's living right next door. And what you see is the location that he's at, there's a pub on the corner, and the
Okay.
Indian guy's explaining all this to him. just saying, look, you know, there's a pub in the corner. They're open, you know, every weekend till really late. You know, it's a pretty popular pub. I'm open 24 hours. You know, I have me and my 13 children running my restaurant and stuff like that. So,
did you just employ a really racist stereotype?
Shut down your establishment and move along quietly, just to allow my fine food dining to mark this corner. Then I'd be very happy. And so the Turkish guy, Jean, he's kind of taken aback. He's just like, hey, asshole, I just moved here. I'm trying to make a name for myself. I didn't come here to this country to get pushed around.
Oh, no.
Like I was back home. Okay, you know what? Like, you know, fuck you. I'm gonna do this.
Yeah.
And so begins a bitter rivalry.
Oh no.
And so this is when it's the next scene where it's early morning.
Okay.
It's early morning. And John, he's showing up at his store. He's got a little bit of a whistle and a bounce to his step. He's not really thinking about the encounter he had yesterday with what actor could play his
with the Indian guy?
His nemesis.
Thinking of some Indian actors, we could have Danny Pudi.
Danny Pudi
as the rival.
Danny Pudi wins.
But I feel like that's really...
our special. Because Community is going to be finished after this season.
Oh, why are you destroying my heart like that? That's
because it's true. As soon as you come to terms with it, the easier it'll be.
No.
Anyway.
Okay.
Anyway, so
you're
so
a dick. Fuck you. Fuck you so much.
Just come to terms with it.
I fucking can't. I fucking won't.
I love Harvard Town and I love Dan Harmon and I love Community just as much as you. But it's just like it's coming to an end.
No, it's not.
Anyway,
I don't fucking do this podcast anymore. You can fuck yourself.
Oh, fine. So you wanna leave our blockbuster just at the door? Then you wanna leave it there?
Guys, I you know, if you have marital problems, you guys should probably figure that out in your own time.
I think anyway, we can just you and me, Phil. We can do it ourselves. Okay. We can do this podcast. We don't need Harrison.
Oh, fuck you guys. I'm out of here. I don't even care. I'm taking.
Yeah, you can just leave. Just leave, Harry.
Fine. Okay, now it's just us. We don't have to worry about that faggot anymore.
Okay, well, do you want to make out then?
Okay, let me see. We should probably make out. it's so good. Oh, delicious.
Anyway, back to the movie.
Let's keep going. It's got really weird. Really quickly.
A little bit further than I thought it was going to. Anyway, okay, so Jean, he's...
Sorry, guys,
he's
I left my hat. What?
He enters the kebab shop. It's early morning. The birds are chirping. He's whistling. He's in a good mood. He's all happy. And he's thinking nothing of Danny Pudi's threat from the day earlier. And so he's walking in the front door and he's like, oh, I've got no care in the world. I'm going to make me some kebabs and stuff like that. Then just as he enters the door, he realizes, wait a second, there is no door. The door is being stolen off his front of this store. So what does he do to overcome this hardship? He just puts up some of those, like, plastic flappy things.
Oh, okay.
And, you know, as he does it, there's, like, a shot of Danny, like, staring through the blinds, really just being like, oh. It's like, oh, you foiled me this time. But, so he's continuing along, and then that's when Jean gets a couple of visitors. Mm-hmm. And it's the local government, and apparently he hasn't lodged the proper permit forms.
Yeah.
He's distraught. He's just like, no worries. Oh, I can deal with those forms now. So he deals with the forms. He's overcoming these obstacles and challenges like a king. You know, he's dealing with it like quite a gentleman.
Okay.
But that's when one day he turns up to work, and his custom homemade handcrafted kebab rotisserie grill maker, whatever it's called, it's broken.
Oh my god. So we have a symbol already of his fastidiousness and his entrepreneurship, and it's destroyed already.
It's been crushed before his very eyes. It's been torn apart. It's just been tampered with. It is not a pretty sight. He can barely even look at it without getting choked up.
Oh,
so
gosh.
He calls Rachel there, and she's Rachel comes in the door and she's like, what, John, can I help you with anything? And he's like, yes, we must kill all the Indians.
Oh my God, okay.
She's like, no, calm down, you can't be, our country's already known for strict racism, so you can't contribute to that at all, otherwise you'll get deported. And he's like, I don't care, this is the last straw, he's been messing with me for long enough. So he marches right up to Danny Pudi's door and he knocks on the door with full seriousness and he's just like, I know who you are. I know where you are, so you better watch out, because I've caught you. And then he walks off, and Danny's just like, oh, well, what was that about? That seemed quite odd. But so what John then does is he goes back to his custom grill, and
okay.
it's then revealed that when Danny came over the other day, he piqued something in John's mind. He made him very very paranoid. Of Danny and stuff like that. So what he did was he set up a he attached something to the bottom of his grill, which wasn't damaged in the break-in, which was it captured all the fat drippings from the kebabs that he'd been making for those last couple of weeks. All the fat is in this single canister that he has.
Okay, where are you going with this?
So he then gets it and he then starts to heat it up.
Okay.
Then starts to refine, starts to work with it. And that's when it cuts to a couple of days later. And this is where it focuses on Danny's home life a little bit more. He wakes up at 3 a.m. He goes to bed at 2 a.m.
Oh, wow. Okay.
So he only gets 1 hour of sleep a night because he has 13 children and he runs a 24-hour restaurant.
Yeah.
So he's constantly going, constantly working. He's got a hard thing. And then he looks at his children and he remembers the first day he came to Australia. And he was tormented by the whiteys. He was criticized for his heritage. His accent was made fun of, all this kind of stuff. So he's dealt with hardship as well.
It's almost like
the villain origin story. You know, he's given a little bit of essence. It's shown that there's something human behind those eyes.
Yeah.
Just as much as there is behind John's eyes. Then it comes back to John and he's made a bomb. And he's
oh my God.
Over towards Danny's place, and Danny sees that through the window one day, and he's just like, oh no, this is bad news, because he doesn't know what John's carrying, but he sees he's carrying something towards him. So you know, John walks there, and he knocks on the door, and then Danny meets him there, and he's just like, well, I guess it's time for our big climactic conversation, which we figure shit out to happen. And he's like, yes, either we figure shit out, or your house is exploded. So they meet in the middle of the street, almost like, you know, an old Western shootout, like High Noon kind of thing. But it's just them talking. Their words are their guns.
Ooh, you know? Okay. So this is kind of like that scene in Heat where...
Just like, you have no fucking right to tell me that I can't open my business here. The essence of this country, the essence of capitalism, the essence of everything which is good in this world is in the fact that I can compete against you with my different culture and my different wares and my different sales techniques and all that kind of stuff. And Danny's like, yeah, I agree. But at the same point, you don't get to the top by letting other people around you leech off your success. And he's like, I'm not leeching. I'm creating my own business. I'm creating my own scene. I won't be stealing your customers. Those who want Indian food can have their Indian food, but those who want kebabs and diarrhea will come to me.
Oh my God. we really have to punch up some of this dialogue, you know?
Well, you're criticizing my dialogue.
I'm just saying, like, you know, maybe not the diarrhea thing, but...
What's wrong with my dialogue?
It's not so much what's wrong with your dialogue, it's how you speak very creepily into the microphone. Sometimes.
What do you
mean? Oh my God! I was expecting it. Didn't want it, but I was expecting it.
Anyway.
Yeah.
So they're crossing off each other in the middle of the road, and it's just like, this is when it's revealed why John's doing it. Why he's in Australia, what everything's all about. And you come to realize that his family is still in Turkey and he's trying to raise enough money. He's just like, hey man, hey, my family isn't even here. You've got your 13 children around you. I haven't seen mine in 2 years, okay? I've been hitchhiking my way across Eastern Europe all the way down the coast to actually get to this country. So don't you tell me I can't open up a restaurant where I want to try to raise money to get them a better life. And so, Danny, he's a little bit taken back. He's just like, oh, I had no idea. And John's like, yeah, damn right you didn't, motherfucker. And that's when he throws the fucking bomb into his face.
Oh, my God. It explodes?
Yeah, it's only like a small thing, but it's actually like what it turns out to be. It's like a grease grenade.
Oh God.
So it bursts, but it coats Danny Pudi in molten hot like
Oh my
lamb chop.
God, Jesus.
So he's getting sick. He's like,
Was that you adding acting, or were you actually just coughing?
he's dying,
Oh,
and
okay.
well, I was coughing. He was dying.
Okay, so he's dead?
Well, no, yeah, he's not so much dead, but he's now severely disabled. His eyes have melted out of his sockets, but the true crime was the fact that all the children were watching the whole time. The 13 children were watching the whole time. They're all still young. They're all still quite young, so they couldn't do anything about it. They couldn't run out. All they can do is stand there in aghast horror at the sight of their father
Oh,
just melt,
Jesus.
like their father's skin and muscles melting into a pool in front of their eyes.
Oh, God.
And so that's when they begin to hold a grudge. They think that guy's going
Wait,
Gurren.
just hold on a second. Is
And
Denny blind?
dead,
Is
huh?
Denny blind now, or is he dead?
He's severely disabled.
Okay,
He
so.
can't talk, he can't see, he can't hear, he can't walk, he's missing limbs, he's kind of just like a limbless vegetable in a wheelchair that's
Oh,
kind of
Jesus.
brought around just for like guilt's sake. Anyway, jump 10 years. Okay, so Danny is now literally just a meat sack that kind of gets wheeled
Okay,
around.
wait. So are we in the third act now? Are
Huh?
we in the third act now?
This is the third
Okay, this is
act.
the third act. Okay.
This is where it's all
10 years
resolved.
later. I'm sorry. I'm
And
sorry. Phil can't be here.
his 13 children, they crowd around him, and it has now been shown that Jean's family has come here, and he has 5 kids. But what's begun has been a bitter feud across between the two of them in the street.
Oh God.
And this is where the title comes from. The dripping, the sins of the fathers drip down onto the children and have
Oh,
created
that's why it's
bitter
called that.
war between the two families. So what happens is they just create this it's just like, they have money financial wars against each other where they sue each other over the smallest infractions against any sort of legality. They sabotage each other's shops and house fronts and cars, and there's even like it's even a borderline gang fight
Wow.
sometimes. But the fact that they're literally just across the road from each other means they can never break out into proper war if they don't want the authorities to get involved
Yeah.
and stuff like that. So Jean is sitting there in his throne made of lamb meat, and Danny's sitting there in his wheelchair as the flesh sack that he's now
Oh
become.
God.
And Jean decides it's time to have the final movement against our final move against this house is now on.
Yeah.
So the five of them, they all call up all their cousins and all their relatives, and they all show up in the cars, and like the street gets locked off and blocked off. And so the 13 children of Danny Pudi, they all know what's going on.
Yeah.
They're led by the oldest, and he kind of like leads the bunch outside, and they're surrounded and stuff like that. But it's kind of like 300 now. It's
Oh my
a
God.
really small versus this massive group of other guys who are just like, it's time for your race to be demolished in this street. So this is where the war breaks out, and they start having like a big fist fight. It's like the Warriors or something like that. Just a massive brawl, and it's impassioned, and there's people die, well, not dying, but people getting trampled on, people getting punched, all that kind of stuff. But that's when one of the daughters from the Indian family and one of the sons from the Turkish family, they look at each other and they kind of stop. And then they realize that they're in love.
Oh, wow. This far into okay.
Yeah, they're in love. And then everyone, they go in and start to share a passionate embrace, because they've been staring at each other from across the street for years now, and this is the first time they've ever actually been allowed out of the house to interact, because they're both the youngest.
Yeah.
So they actually they begin to kiss and passionately embrace and all that kind of stuff, and then everyone around them turns around and looks these two people who have crossed the divide and are now kissing, and they're just like, they drop the weapons, they stop
Oh
fighting,
wow,
they
okay.
realize, oh, there's a better way. But this is when Jean storms out and he's just like, no, no, what are you doing? You can't do this. And that's when the son, the youngest son of his, who was kissing the youngest daughter of Annie Pudi's character, he turns around. He says, no, Dad, we're not fighting your war anymore. And that's when he walks off into the sunset.
Ah.
So really, it's a really long Bildung's Roman or coming of age story for a character that doesn't really get introduced into the last 2 minutes.
Wait, is that the whole film?
Yeah, that's the film.
I mean, I feel like you kind of rushed the ending there.
You think that was a rushed ending?
Just a little bit, yeah.
I felt like I was trying to pack it up into a neat little package because I didn't really know where it was going to end.
Well, I thought I'm glad you didn't do the thing that we did with the last Gang Warfare film. So,
I've done Gang Warfare before
with the Turnstile Hate.
Oh yeah.
Well, no, I'm just glad it didn't turn that way. I'm just
No, it kind of took a Romeo and Juliet kind of ending. So
yeah,
like,
but do you don't think it's a bit cliche if it turns out that way?
It's the power of love, Harrison. Everyone can understand the power of love.
Okay, I just feel like, you know, that kind of comes out of everywhere, and
it's the power of love.
Okay. Okay, Adam. Okay.
Okay.
Okay, fine then.
Okay, well, what have you said, man?
Okay, fine.
No, that's okay. Do you want me to come over there with the theme song for it?
No, I'm fine. I'm just thinking that maybe it could go a different way at the end.
Oh, so you wanna write an alternate ending?
I think I should write an alternate ending.
Well, throw it at me, pitch it.
Okay, so basically they're all out in the street. It's exactly the same thing as what's going on with yours. Same thing as what's going on with yours. They're all out in the street, and then the youngest kid, who actually is like a lot younger, like it's like a grandson comes out, and then he sees Danny Pudi. Like, you know, still fairly not bandaged up, but he's got like a catheter and stuff like that. But he sees him like through the window, and like through the window of the other place, and he starts crying, and he's just like, what was John Renault's like, what's wrong, son? What's wrong? And he's just like, who's that man? And I'm like, which man? Like, that man. And you like realize after all these years that Jean hasn't seen what happened to Danny at all. Just ignore that, everybody. Ignore that completely. It happened before, you can ignore it again. And he just starts crying, and he doesn't realize like all that's happened, and people are already fighting each other. There's already just blood strewn in the streets, and then, you know, cops can turn up, and they just start, you know, wailing on people. And then there's like a very slow motion sort of turn like around Jean Renault, and he just breaks down in the middle of the street, and then finally he like, while all this stuff is happening, he like walks up to, like, he knocks on the door, and he walks up to Danny. And Danny answers the door, and he like flinches, and he tries to roll away in turn, but he falls out of the chair. And then Jean just reaches out this hand to Danny, and then we just cut to black there.
That's not bad.
That's just an
but,
idea.
I feel like it resolves the ending too much, and as someone who prizes artistic integrity above all else, I think that we should go with my ending.
Okay.
Because it's much more poignant and hard-hitting.
Okay. Well, I was going to say, instead of cutting to black there, maybe Jean gets him up and he says, I've been such... He just whispers in his ear, and you think it's going to be something sweet because they both look like they're about to cry. And he says to him, I haven't finished what I started. And he just knocks him right in the face, and he just stomps his body right then and there. Then he turns around and he starts taking out his kids one by one.
Yeah, okay, we got our ending.
And it just ends with like him in... it ends with Jean in prison, and like his whole family is there and stuff like that.
And they're all high-fiving him for the great kill job that he's done.
Yeah, yeah.
Okay. Well, that was The Dripping.
That was The Dripping, yeah. That wasn't an exploitation film.
Roll credits.
Roll credits on that, and yeah.
That wasn't exploitation at all. That was hard-hitting emotional race issues.
Yeah. Yeah, let's say that.
We were tackling racism, Harrison. Like, say what you want, but I think we really progressed society today with our story. We really brought people together. We really closed a divide.
Whatever you say, Ben. No, I think we bring up some interesting issues that a lot of people aren't talking about, and maybe we get vilified
And we always bring up some interesting issues in a dumb way.
Yeah, I think that's what we should say, is we bring up interesting issues in a very, very, very dumb way.
Listen to us butcher good conversation.
But here's the thing, is that not everybody knows that's where every episode's gonna go. Like, it's not like we fall
into
that where we just do sci-fi films or, you know, something ridiculous like that. Because that could have happened, you know, for the first couple of weeks, as they were very sci-fi-ish. But we've turned it all around.
Well, yeah, I know every time I try to tackle a different genre or you know, a different social issue. So,
well, I mean, do you want to give us a preview of what social issue you might be attacking next week? I think maybe you should sorry. Maybe you should deal with feminism.
I ain't touching that with a 10-foot pole.
I would.
So
maybe you should. Maybe
my
I'd
dick.
Like...
Okay. I'm gonna get burned by. I'm gonna. Yeah. I'm
yeah.
Gonna
if
burned.
we had fans, maybe they would burn you. if we had people that listen to us more than the people that kind of already do. So I think yeah, that was the dripping. I was very.
Yeah. I know. I quite liked it.
Yeah.
I feel like it could, I don't know, is there some sort of, like, Martin Luther King Jr. prize?
For what?
For racially sensitive filmmaking.
I think it's called the Spike Lee Award, and I think Spike Lee just, like, looks at you and just nods, and he just goes, yeah, you are right.
Okay, well, Spike Lee is going to...
Well, I mean, that's the...
Not just look at us, he's going to search us out.
I mean, that's... He would fucking hate us. He hates all of Tarantino's films, so... but
yeah, well, fuck him. Tarantino, he's breaking down boundaries, you know. As a privileged white boy, of course he's going to know better than people like Spike Lee to be able to make films better about... Okay,
Nope.
Okay, just a disclaimer. All racism that we have on this show is ironic. We're all making fun of the fact that we're Australian and we're being caricatures of that sense. I feel like we've needed to say that since the beginning.
Yeah, like what we need to clarify is that I'm not going to say we're not racist, because like there's a podcast called Is This Racist? And I'm pretty sure everything that we've said in this episode, including the whole thing about the guy and the turtle, is probably incredibly racist. We understand, like, we have people that we know who are definitely racist or incredibly racially biased towards some people for whatever reason.
Well,
we don't...
see, the whole racist issue, it's all about, like, for me at least, I'm white and I'm heterosexual and I'd say lower middle class. So I don't really have any anything to complain about. I'm when it comes to being in a minority, while there might be fewer than us, there's more of us in better positions in the world and stuff like that. So really I'm of the both of us, we're of the socioeconomic
yes.
group, which has the least amount of ability to be able to complain about how hard life has been for us.
The only thing we have
or
to worry about
anything
is,
like that.
Is guilt. That's literally the only thing in the world we have to worry about is guilt.
Yeah, pretty much. We've just got to feel guilty about all the shit that we cause and stuff like that.
Yeah.
And feeling guilty is a lot easier than actually going through proper hardship, I'd have to say.
Yeah, because
so,
guilty can just be like, oh shit, there's a new movie out by Quentin Tarantino. Let's go watch it. Cause then
yeah, but all that being said, I don't know why all these people are complaining. I mean, like,
well, it's because you're white. That's why. It's because you've only known being white. So yeah, I think that's why.
Yeah, well, tough titties to them, you know.
Yeah, and with that,
anyway, that I kind of I recanted on my point halfway through and tried to make a joke, and I don't think it landed. So I think we should probably leave it there before we dig ourselves into any more of a hate hole.
Well, I don't think we'd have to worry about digging ourselves into a hate hole, because we wouldn't pay people to do it for us. Okay, let's leave it there.
I don't think we're really digging ourselves into a hate hole, because no one's listening to us other than
No, that's a good
white.
Point. That's a very good point. We need more
yeah.
friends who are not white. If you're a friend and you're not white, please email us at backroompitching.
Yeah, if you are not white, please come hang out with us, just to lessen our guilt, if anything.
That's what I'm going to do. You've got your GoPro camera, right? And do you have, like, a mic that, like, attaches into it or whatever?
I can get one.
Okay, I think what we should do is... when we're actually, you know, let's talk about this off.
Okay, yeah.
So
Anyway,
anyway, I'm
let's
Harrison.
close this mother up.
Okay, yeah.
So, I'm Ben Semenchuk.
And I'm Harrison Engstrom. Thank you for listening for Backroom Pitching.
Goodbye.